childlessness is not something that people would naturally talk about in party conversation and so on. So do you think at this time of year, Advent, when a lot of people are expectantly waiting for the birth of the Messiah, that maybe there are a lot of people behind closed doors who are maybe secretly struggling with this time of year?
Absolutely. I think Christmas can really accentuate those feelings. For many, it'll be the end of a year where they started off in great hope and expectation. And there'll be a lot of couples out there who thought, definitely by Christmas we're going to have a baby. So there's going to be that drawing to the end of a year where you feel disappointed. But also, as you say, Advent is totally about waiting and about arrival. I think the word Advent means arrival. And so for many, just the focus on a baby and the promise of that, the miracle of that, is just front and centre. And it can feel quite embarrassing, actually, and quite humiliating. It's not something that's at the forefront of people's conversations at this time of year.
So when you and your husband realised that this was going to be a bit of a tricky area for yourselves, did you decide just to keep it to yourselves rather than let anyone know what you were going through?
Yeah, we kept it to ourselves for about 10 years, other than just our closest friends and parents. And there were many reasons for that, and that was a not necessarily a wrong thing in any way. It was good to keep it private and personal and off radar until lately, and then we did break our silence on it. But yeah, we kept it very close to ourselves and our loved ones.
Now, it can be one thing not saying anything to anyone, but quite another people kind of prying and asking questions. Along the way, did you get a few people saying, oh, when are you two going to have a family?
Yeah, all the time. Church became a bit of a navigating field. Certainly the morning services at church were very family focused and child focused. Had so many questions week on week that actually we switched services entirely. To be honest, I became really good at batting back well-rehearsed lines, none of which were untrue, actually. We were having other big events in our life and change of careers and various things that were our focus, so I could give reason without actually saying what was going on.
I mean, obviously this time of year, there is a lot of focus on children. There'll be nativity plays and carol concerts and so on. So how do you manage the sort of child-focusedness of this time of year?
Yeah, I'm definitely in a different place to I was 10 years ago. And actually, the pain of being unable to have children is something that creeps up on you at very unexpected times throughout the calendar year anyway. And the times you predict might be the most painful sometimes aren't. You know, we have some godchildren that we adore who are all little, and I get a lot of joy from going to their nativity plays. We've never missed one. We go and I'm the embarrassing godmother in the crowd, sort of waving and cheering them on. And I do get a lot of pleasure from it. Some years it stings, others not so much. But really, the feelings that Christmas can conjure up, as I said before, maybe of disappointment the year that's passed, or just a reminder, as you say, a very child-focused time. I have to work those through every month of the year. So really, it's just an ongoing process. And a lady at work said to me last year, actually, she said, oh, Christmas is all about the kids, isn't it? She said, if you haven't got kids, you know, it's meaningless, really. And that comment really hurt my feelings. Of course, she had no idea. And she's a mum and a grandmother, and she's a lovely lady, and she wouldn't have meant it. But that sat with me for a good couple of weeks, and I felt quite blue. But other times, you know, I just roll out the coping strategies that I do all year in prayer and in time with God and in trying to keep a check on my heart, really, and make sure I'm not getting bitter or losing the essence of what the season's about.
You mentioned there that sometimes attending those nativity plays can, you know, be a bit of a sting and can be difficult. So how important has it been over these last 10 years for you personally and you as a couple to have some time just to kind of grieve and just let the tears flow?
Yeah, really important. I think there's no rules to this or to any sort of pain, really, or grief. We've had to create boundaries for ourselves. I've realised situations that really aren't good for me, and I'm sure Andy's the same. Personally, I learnt a long time ago that baby showers were just a little bit too much, the games and the frivolity and all of that. So I generally put a ring around that and I don't go. I might celebrate with the friend on my own in our own personal way, but perhaps not so publicly. But yeah, you know, I just think, so it's great to read the Bible, it's great to pray, it's great to be prayed for, it's great to read books and to really immerse yourself in God's presence. But it's also good sometimes just to even have a break from that and be kind to yourself. And as you say, let let the tears fall. If you need a day eating junk and watching mindless TV or reading a trashy book rather than a spiritual book, I think that's really fine, or taking a long walk. And for me, actually, exercise has become a really big part of just keeping my head cool and keeping myself on top. But as you say, some days you just have to be real and be true to those feelings. And I remember a couple of occasions, there's just been a few stings along the way, as inevitably, but I remember one Sunday actually giving communion out at our church, and it was the morning service before we decided to move to the evening service, and we were given the section of the church which is where all the newborn babies were. And as some people might have in their own churches, you lay hands on the babies, because obviously you don't give them the bread and the wine, and you pray a blessing over them. And I think maybe 10, 15 babies in, I suddenly just felt this pain in my chest. I didn't recognise it. And I actually thought I was going to faint. I felt really unwell. And I somehow managed to pass over the wine that I was holding to someone else and left poor Andy to do it. And I just had to go out the fire escape. And I remember just kneeling at the back of our church in a car park in, you know, freezing cold, and crying like I'd never cried in my life before. I guess I remember that occasion because it was probably quite healing, even though it felt extremely messy at the time.
And I think they're just an important reminder not to hold our emotions in. It's one thing perhaps not to go around telling everyone what we're going through, but making sure that we're open just to allowing those emotions to surface as part of the healing process.
Totally. We do ourselves a disservice long term if we swallow, swallow, swallow. And there are always occasions where it's more appropriate to swallow for a moment or to pause on that thought or feeling, because it wouldn't be appropriate to get on your knees and lose it. But for the most part, you need an outlet, and you need to talk, and you need to pray. But I would say, looking back, you know, you change a lot over the course of a decade, and your grief changes a lot. Do I want a baby any less? No way. Does it hurt any less? No, not really, but in different ways. I think it's just about being very real with where you are. And some days the pain is so bad that it takes your breath away and you could never express it verbally. And other days you can have a good old pouring out of your heart. And
now, you mentioned that it's not just sort of certain times of year that can be a challenge, whether it's, you know, Advent season, Christmas, obviously, you know, Mothering Sunday, those kind of things. But actually, every month there is a reminder, you know, the good old period comes round.
Yeah.
How do you handle that? Is that something that you find difficult? Obviously, hormones are all over the place, so women can be a bit more teary. Do you just kind of go with it and let yourself cry if you feel upset about it?
Yeah, I think I've heard many women speak about that. I think maybe initially for me that was difficult, but I actually saw that monthly cycle as hope, because for me, where there was a cycle, there was ovulation, and well, I don't
a
need
sign
to spell
of fertility.
Out. Yeah, I don't need to spell out the sort of. I'm a nurse, so I could go into great detail, but I won't. I'll refrain. So for me, it was a sign of hope and a sign of expectation, right up until, well, now, really, I just think it's a sign of hope. I think it's a gift. I think it's a blessing. But yes, a mystery also. And, you know, many misleading tests along the way, and the ovulation sticks and all of that sort of thing. You know, you do what you need to do and you get your charts and your spreadsheets and everything. Been there, done it. But, you know, sometimes we can do everything that we can, humanly speaking, do and physically do, and it just isn't quite enough. But I think I used to just pray, really, if I had a monthly cycle. And I just used to thank God for it and just believe that it might lead to something one day and try not to lose hope with that, really.
Well, revolutionary idea there. Praying and thanking God when your period comes round. I mean, that's a challenge for all women, regardless of where you're at in the fertility journey, to thank God for the gift of that cycle, wherever you're at in it. Now, you mentioned, obviously, you and your husband Andy kept this to yourself for a long time. So how did you go about starting to tell people what you've been going through? Because it's not the kind of thing you just, you know, stick on social media and suddenly do da-da-da as an announcement. Or was that what you did?
No, not by any means. A year ago, I was really impressed upon me by the Lord to do something with this situation we're in. And I think I'd always dreamt that we might do something one day, but when we had our miracle, basically, in the form of a baby. So I'd never really thought that we would speak out whilst we were in the trenches of trying to conceive. But I was actually at the Colour Conference. Dawn Cherie Wilkinson did an amazing message during that conference, and she spoke from the trenches of her own infertility and difficulty to conceive. And it was the first sermon I'd ever heard where it wasn't a sort of done and dusted conclusion, where they weren't stood there with their miracle and their retrospective testimony, but it was vulnerable and it was raw. And for me, it was actually game changer. And I was elated to hear this message. I was encouraged. I was stirred. It was amazing. But then when I left the conference, I began to feel uneasy because I could feel that God was pushing me to do the same in my sphere of influence. And I held on to it for about 8 weeks, and I didn't dare tell Andy or anyone, because once you've said it, you know, you're held to account. And Andy and I went to Cornwall on a holiday, and we were doing this ginormous coastal walk, and I tentatively floated the idea, and he just leapt at it, and I think it's what he'd been waiting for. So really, we began to dream up this event for couples in the same situation as us. And then as we began to develop and launch that, we decided to speak to or write to our sort of friends and family who weren't in the know, still dear and close friends, but ones we just hadn't gone there with. So we told them personally, and then we launched more publicly.
Did you feel quite nervous once you had sort of contacted these people, not knowing what they were going to say or how they were going to respond?
Yeah, I was sick with it. I just felt so naked and so vulnerable, and I hated it. In fact, when we launched the event, I definitely went undercover for a couple of weeks. I didn't really go on social media. I hardly went out the house apart from to work. I was just terrified. And you know what? Some of it was maybe justifiably so, just because you're really putting out the most guarded and personal part of your life there. And some of it was out of pride. There were certain people I just didn't want to know, because I didn't want them to know that my life wasn't perfect and that I was struggling. And I felt, actually, up until really recently, I felt like it was a failure on my part, and I was embarrassed and I was afraid of all the questions. And one thing I would say is my friends and family have been so respectful to not ask loads of questions. They just didn't. They didn't intrude or pry or push, and that was really refreshing and actually made me think I could have done it a bit sooner.
In these kinds of situations, I know some people have shared on the programme over the years that people will then start telling them, you know, oh well, my friend couldn't, and then XYZ happened, and then they had the miracle baby, or yeah, you know, they started drinking green tea, or they stood on their head. Do you think that that is one area that perhaps a lot of couples who are in the situation can face, a kind of bombardment of well-meaning people who want to give advice?
Absolutely. And we're blessed with just gorgeous friends and family. But of course, we've had the comment that sort of annoys and makes me laugh all in one, really, is that, oh, have you ever thought of adoption? Which I just think is quite funny, because after a decade, I can guarantee we've thought of everything. And so, we've learnt to be a bit gracious. I'm fairly outspoken, but I have learnt to take a deep breath and bite my tongue sometimes. And as you say, really, you are given a heap of advice, be it just relax to have you tried X, Y or Z. But I can guarantee if there's anything to try out there, we have already tried it and more. It was mainly just about smiling and nodding and sometimes actually not saying too much more, because there's that desire to maybe overshare or talk to fill difficult silences, or justify your thought processes, or justify why you haven't done X, Y or Z to this point. And we haven't arrived yet. We don't know where this journey is going to take us yet. So sometimes it was just about actually being secure enough to just stand back and say less, and that less would be more. And keep, although we went public, it was very important to Andy and I that we kept some things still private. So we haven't shared all the details publicly, so that we have some private and intimate details between us and the Lord and between us as a couple. And that's been really important.
How do you handle sort of the dreams you might have for having a family? I mean, obviously this time of year, you know, I'm sure for any couple who would want children, you'd be thinking, oh, well, this is my ideal Christmas. You know, I'd have children in this situation, and this is how we'd celebrate. How do you handle those kinds of dreams? Do you just let go of them? Do you hold on to them?
I hold on to them. Man, I know what I dress my kids in at Christmas. I have the outfits picked out. Let's not deny that desire and that dream. Well, for us, it hasn't it hasn't yet been replaced with anything else. And everybody's story is different. And for some couples, the Lord clearly gives them a new dream or a new direction or a new something. And God has very graciously and kindly put other things in our hands that we've hopefully been faithful with and run with 100% in the last decade. But the greatest desire of our hearts, it hasn't wavered, it hasn't weakened. And actually, genuinely, if you were to ask those who are close to us, nor have we for one second given up hope of God doing a miracle. But miracles, I'm learning, take their form and shape in many different ways. And whereas I might have once thought a miracle is just that baby or babies, multiple birth, I'll take anything. Do you know what I mean? Now I realise that actually miracles come in so many different shapes and sizes. And for us, the miracle may be a new focus or direction. It may be exploring fertility treatments and options that are out there, or adoption or whatever else. But the hope and the expectation hasn't gone. And actually, 10 years on, we're just more focused and more resolved not to let a bitter spirit develop in us, not to become resentful, not to let life pass us by, to still really try and get out of this season what we can and what God intends for us. And when we launched the Rhythm of Hope, I really felt like God actually said to me when I was walking in Cornwall, I really felt he said to me, the reason this season hasn't come to an end yet is because I haven't accomplished what I wanted to in you and in it.
Interesting.
And until you're obedient with it, it's going to go on a bit longer. So because I want it to be over, I was very happy to, you know, listen to what he had to say.
To what extent do you think there's a danger that maybe couples who are going through infertility can kind of have infertility as the lens through which their whole world, you know, everything is on hold because of that, or every decision is made because of the infertility?
I mean, for us personally, or from, I won't speak for Andy, but for me, that is very much a reality. And how could it not be? You look at life through that lens of wanting children. And for many years, I could hardly plan a holiday or anything more than 6 months ahead, because I'd always be thinking, well, maybe I'll be pregnant by then, maybe I won't be able to fly or won't be able to have those vaccines, or, you know, and I planned life around it. I did have to stop doing that to many extents, because you have to live. And let's be honest, any disappointment, any persistent disappointment, any ongoing challenge or trial, that's enough to challenge any marriage. That is enough to challenge you professionally, personally. That can rock your faith. And actually, you have to make a decision. I'm not going to say I haven't had dark days. I have had dark days, and I still have them. They're fewer and further between, but they're still very much part of the tapestry and the kind of the outlook of our life. But I think you have to try somehow, little by little, to still find joy and still find meaning and still find purpose. And sometimes it's actually been the times where I've done things for other people that has set me free. So if I've been invited to speak somewhere, for many years I've been invited to preach at events, and I'd say to Andy, I just can't do it because I'm just so disappointed, and I just can't do it. And he would really push me to keep on keeping on with the other gifts and interests and passions God had given me. And actually, some of those times after speaking at events or being involved in something or coming alongside someone, I felt at my best, because I'd actually just been concentrating on someone else for a little while rather than myself.
It's fascinating how that can be a sort of a healing process, yeah, really, to be, yeah, focusing sort of on something else or someone else, yeah, for a season.
And it sounds cheesy, let's be honest, it does, but taste and see, try it, test it. I'd say to anyone, just try, whether it's doing a volunteer scheme or a soup kitchen or a whatever, helping an elderly person who's lonely. It doesn't really matter, but it's stepping outside of your own sadness for a moment and engaging with someone else's, and it's quite healing.
Yeah, powerful, powerful challenge this morning. My studio guest, Sarah Lang, just talking about her journey with infertility and how this time of year can be a challenge because, of course, there's so much focus in Advent and Christmas on children. You mentioned when you told family and close friends that one of the real blessings for you was that people didn't ask too many questions. But are there times when actually you would quite like someone just to kind of contact you out of the blue and go, how's it going? How are you coping with the journey?
Totally. And actually, I'm very honest that sometimes people just they just can't get it right. And that's my problem, not theirs. If they ask me, I'm offended. If they don't ask me, I'm offended. So either way, you lose. Welcome to my world. And I'm really sorry if you're my friend or family member. The fact is, yes, you long sometimes to be asked how it's going, or maybe just to receive a text or an email or a letter rather than a face-to-face interaction. For me personally, it's been a bit easier. You do want to be asked. And I think if there are people in your life you've given permission to come alongside and nurture or mentor you, particularly those relationships, I really value being asked how it's going. And being prayed for. And some days it does feel like 10 years on, a lot of people have sort of fallen off the radar, so to speak. In the early days, they were really keen, they were really passionate, there were lots of prophecies or words of encouragement or prayers, and they have got less over the years. And I know it's because, you know, not many of us are built for the long haul with these things. We live in a really immediate culture where we want things here and now, and life gets busy and other prayer requests come in and other needs and other sorrows and heartaches come in. So I realise our pain isn't front and centre, but it's good to hold people in mind and not forget, and to acknowledge days like Mother's Day or birthdays or Christmas, as you say, and times which are actually a bit more painful than the other days.
It's interesting you're saying that, you know, sometimes for people it's difficult with the long haul. You know, if it was something like perhaps someone going through several rounds of cancer, people get that. Do you think part of the thing is that the reason why people can't maybe sort of understand and journey with or alongside people who are journeying with infertility is because they simply don't understand what the journey's like?
Yeah, I do. And I think someone described once that infertility is a grief, one of the only types of grief that gets worse with time. A lot of other forms of grief and loss get better with time, and time is a healer, as that saying goes. But with infertility, time, for the most part, makes it worse, because you're thinking, oh, if any had had children, my children would be this age by now. Or your friends who've had children, you're doing life with them and their kids are now starting school and there's the first this and the first that, and you're still like, oh my gosh, I'm still peeing on pregnancy test sticks and seeing one line instead of two, and you guys are overtaking me in life, you know. And our parents are getting older, and I long for them to become grandparents, and I'm thinking, oh come on, you know. I feel just that urgency, I suppose. So as you say, the long haul, in the ones going through it, I would say genuinely it builds stamina and endurance. And I was thinking on the way here today about there's a quote in Louis Giglio's Advent devotional, actually. He's got a great Advent devotional, and it says, if we're truly waiting on God, we won't miss anything. And it made me think of that passage in James that says, let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete and not lacking anything. Or in Romans, a bit more challenging, but where it says, we hope for what we do not see and we wait eagerly with patience and composure.
Wow, that's challenging translation. Is it waiting with patience and composure?
Yeah,
wow.
And I think, okay, some people may be in it for the long haul with you. Others may get distracted along the way. That's fine. What's actually really important for anyone waiting on anything from the Lord, I suppose, is your posture of waiting. And that's been our focus. And I've got some friends who've just not, of course, who've not wavered, and parents and family members. I've got one friend who has an alarm set on her phone for the same time every day, and it goes off at 2 o'clock, and she prays for us, and she's done that for the best part of 10 years, and I love that. It's so kind of her to do that. So I suppose as well, if you're a friend or family member supporting couples going through something like this or something different, if you feel it impressed on you to stand with someone and to believe for something with someone, yeah, it's the long haul that counts, and it's making sure that person's character continues to develop.
Now, you mentioned that when you and Andy decided, right, okay, this is the moment to tell people, that you kind of went into hiding for a bit, and obviously people would have presumably known or caught wind of the fact that there was this event that you were going to be running for couples who were dealing with infertility.
Yeah.
I mean, at that moment, were there people who kind of contacted you, maybe you hadn't heard from ages, and kind of just wanted to say something? into that season for you?
Yeah, lots of nice messages on Facebook and inbox messages from people I hadn't heard from for a long time. And sometimes it caught me off guard, but generally it was just really encouraging, and I had lovely messages and just so much support. Andy and I were so incredibly humbled by the support of everybody, the grace that everyone showed us.
We'll find out some more about how the first event went and about the next event that's coming up at the beginning of next year. There will be some people listening who haven't been through this journey, Sarah, and they want to try and understand how they can be a support to someone who is perhaps going through this. So have you got any tips as to what people can do or maybe shouldn't do to support? I know every couple is different and we'll find different things helpful or unhelpful, but there may be a few things you could pick out.
Yeah, I think... Well, firstly, I'd say I would urge against people in churches or just in life to asking couples when they're going to have children. You know, it's a really sensitive question to ask couples, and it can be so wounding if you catch them in a painful sort of moment. Also, unless you really have permission to have access to someone on that level, i.e. if you're a mentor or a pastor, and if you're going to be able to hold their answer well, I wouldn't ask it. Because if you're asking it, you need to be prepared for possibly a difficult answer and be prepared to then stand shoulder to shoulder with that person, not just have an awkward silence and move on. So I'd say unless you have access on that level with somebody, maybe refrain from asking. If you are in a position where you have access and someone's confided in you that they're struggling to have children, it's just good to have a really honest chat and ask that person or that couple what they would like from you, because the way I've gone about it and handled it and feel about it is very different to how somebody else might. And for me, you know, when friends are announcing pregnancies, for example, the kindness of friends to drop me a card in the post before they put it on Facebook, that really means the world. Then I don't have that lurching feeling when I'm scrolling down my Facebook or Instagram feed of a scam picture. You know, just those little thoughtful moments, or telling you maybe via text or email or by letter or card rather than face to face and catching you off guard and in a moment. And some days you're going to be elated and other days it's going to crush. And so I think the thoughtfulness of asking friends, how can we help you? What would you like? And, you know, for some of my friends, I've said, please, can you do X, Y, and Z? And for others, I've said, please, could you just never mention it again? just communication, thoughtfulness, kindness, little messages, flowers on your doorstep, anything, a chocolate bar, a magazine. It's just kindness, really, has worked for me. But maybe just talking to your friends and asking what they would like and what they need.
Yeah, so a great rule of thumb there is to ask each couple, you know, what it would be that you could do that would be beneficial for them. So how do you go about answering the question if you kind of meet someone, either at a party or even in a work contest, wherever, and they say, have you got children, Sarah? Have you got a stock answer?
I get asked this question a lot, and my heart still skips a beat, and it still makes me quake in my boots, and I'm not really sure why. I think I'm losing a bit of the shame now. It depends what context I'm in. I have a stepdaughter who's 16 called Chloe, and she is awesome. So, of course, I always answer with a yes and tell them about Chloe, because she is my daughter. If they usually then say, do you have children of your own? So, you know, the line of questioning continues. And it depends what context I'm in. If I'm at work or I'm a nurse, so if it's a patient or a relative of a patient who says, oh, do you have children, you know, then I do still just fob off because it's professional and things like that. But if it's in a context where I feel secure, I'd either maybe say something as casual as, well, we'd love to have children one day, but it's not proving particularly easy. That's a pretty well-rehearsed answer. Or if I feel it's being asked of someone who looks like they're willing to come alongside, maybe someone a bit older and wiser or someone with a pastoral heart, I might share a bit more and say, actually, I'm really glad you've asked because we've been trying and we're really struggling. But I gauge each interaction on its own.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you been surprised sometimes about how much kind of strangers can be wanting to pry into your sort of personal life?
I have, but I've also been as surprised at the grace of some people who don't. And I think it's a 50-50. Some days I'm offended and other days I'm really blessed. And I think that's just life, isn't it? And interactions with people. And I work with the general public and, you know, there's always going to be little trip-ups. But it makes me more aware of the way I act towards other people. Not just on this front, but on every front and the questions I ask. And if I'm going to engage with someone, why do I want to do it? Is it because I'm actually genuinely interested and willing to do what they need with the answer, or am I just being nosy? And I try and check myself a little bit.
Now, we mentioned earlier on that one of the reasons that all of this came into the open, you start telling people, was because you felt this prompting from God to use this somehow, to be able to gather other people. And you held your first what was called Rhythm of Hope event.
Yes.
I mean, gathering lots of couples together who are kind of hurting about this, was that a slightly awkward thing when you all kind of got together? You all knew something about each other in the room, but you weren't perhaps quite sure what to say. How did it work out?
You're so right. And, you know, I thought I had considered every aspect of that day apart from that one. And when it came to the day and the guests were arriving, it was a very intimate and discreet and private event. So there was no photos, there was no tweets or anything like that. It was really discreet. But even still, we didn't do name badges for that reason, nothing. You know, everyone could be anonymous. But the couples coming in, I had underestimated the courage it would take for them just to walk through the door, and they just looked mortified. Their heads were down, they were embarrassed, I felt sick for them. Do you know what I mean? And like their faces, and just that amount, as you say, of people with a common pain in one room and knowing something so incredibly personal about each other without it ever being spoken, and many of whom I'm sure like us have kept it a secret. And I just want to kind of give highest praise to our team who cottoned onto it, because I was distracted and hosting and organising front of house bits, and our team just cottoned onto that and made them feel so welcome and so at ease. And you know, there was a lot of home baking and food and other niceties to soften the blow a bit, but the emails we've had since the day did say, I arrived feeling ashamed, embarrassed, awkward. I wanted to turn back around and get into the car. And it was incredible to see throughout the day that lift off people. And, you know,
a safe environment, because I guess you had other people around who perhaps weren't going to judge you, who you just
totally
automatically knew, understood something of what you were going through.
And we laid out the day in the way that we would have wanted it. And I realise not everyone's the same, but we didn't do group work. We said, you do not have to do small talk. You don't have to network. You don't have to chat. You've got absolute license in the coffee breaks to completely just sit introvert and not talk to a soul. And that is so fine here today. And a lot of couples really appreciated that. And others did chat and meet and have exchanged details and kept in touch if that's what they needed.
Sure.
But my mum and dad were sort of running the refreshments and the sort of, the welcoming side of things. And my mum just said, hour on hour, as people went for cups of tea and things, she just noticed their eyes lifting, their shoulders dropping, the smiles coming on. And I think quite quickly, and just due to a lot of prayer, the day was one where they could relax and feel comfortable and safe.
So there's another Rhythm of Hope Day coming up at the very beginning of January, a great time of year when perhaps people are thinking about, you know, goals, dreams, hopes and all the rest of it. So what does the day entail?
Yeah, so, I mean, we're really humbled and delighted to be running a second event. We ran the first one because the Lord told us to, and it went great, way better than we could have ever dreamt. And we are so grateful for that. But to be honest, there was a slight feeling of, great, that went really well, let's leave it there. However, we've had so many inquiries through the website and so many emails of people asking if there's going to be another, and we realise that this is an ongoing journey. And actually, even for the couples who came last year, 12 months is so much can happen in 12 months when you're trying for a baby, and your situation changes, or things you've tried fail, or babies you've conceived don't go to full term. Even if the same couples all come back and revisit, that's fine, or new ones too. So it's going to follow a very similar format to last year. There's worship, there's teaching, there's prayer on offer if couples want it, but it's certainly not enforced. We'll be looking at things like ethics and theology surrounding fertility treatments. We'll be looking at how to manage the stress of trying for a baby and to keep your marriage strong and your life still moving forward. We've got talks about broken dreams and new beginnings, how to navigate your faith in times of difficulty. And then we have I'm really excited about the afternoon session is our sofa couples feature. And that last year was probably one of the most popular parts of the day. And what we've got are friends and people we know who have each found different ways of having a family, whether it be through egg donation, sperm donation, adoption, fostering, embryo adoption, so many different areas. And no one area or option is pushed over the other. They just share their stories. They all love the Lord. They've all journeyed. There are people there who've lost children, who've had miscarriages. So a real wealth of sort of experience. And we just interview those friends prayerfully and they share a bit about themselves. And that's just a great opportunity for people to just listen and take what they want from it.
Sure.
Yeah.
So who is the day for? Who are the kind of the target people?
Yeah, so the day, I mean, the advertisement and the website say it's for couples struggling with infertility. What we mean by that is people who are struggling with infertility and are in a relationship rather than being childless because they're single. And that's the only reason we drew that sort of outline of the day. But obviously, if only one part of the couple can come, that's fine. It doesn't have, you don't have to come as a couple, but we've said couples who are struggling with infertility, it is aimed at Christians because we're really basing it on the Bible and on what God can say and how he comes through for us in these seasons, how we can sort of journey well regardless of the outcome. That's our heart. We're not saying come and you will leave pregnant or within a year you'll have a baby. If God chooses to do that, we welcome that and we'll ask him to. But it's more about regardless of the outcome, can you still be whole?
Sure, yeah,
and,
absolutely.
So it's for couples struggling with infertility.
Is secondary infertility as well?
Absolutely, primary or secondary. It doesn't matter if you have children and then you're trying for more, whatever. But it probably, or it definitely really wouldn't be that appropriate for those who are a childless through singleness. And it's not either particularly focused on people who've lost children, who bereaved, miscarriages covered and that sort of thing. But beyond that, not quite. We just had to focus on what we could, but we realised there's many topics out there that are crying out for a day. We just had to hone in on a few.
Sure. So, website address, if people want to find out more, recommend it to a friend or maybe pluck up the courage to attend themselves.
Yes, so it's Saturday the 7th of January and it's www.rhythmofhope.co.uk. And as I say, just spread the word. Gently offer it to someone who you know is maybe struggling.
Probably not best idea, though, for a Christmas present, is it?
Maybe not. Oh, who knows? No, maybe not. But everyone is welcome. And we're just really expectant that God will do what he needs to do in these couples. And as you say, the start of a new year is one of resolve. It's one of hope. Sometimes one of fear. So we just want to address all of that. And encourage and love and bless people and just sort of stand there really in solidarity